Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
God gave me a Ferrari because I am a Ferrari. You're a Ferrari too.
When God made you, he had all the options put on. You are fully loaded and totally equipped.
So do this with me.
Where did we ever come up with the style of preaching we have today? There is some entertaining preaching, but not convicting preaching, and the legacy has been tragic.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Lessons. Lessons.
From
a football player. Gonna do something we don't normally do here at Wretched Radio. Sports talk. That's right. We're gonna jump out of our lane to talk about sports. It's always a good idea to stay in your lane. For instance, don't know if you recall, but a few weeks ago, Mark Golley, Christianity Today, he wrote a lengthy article on why he believed Donald Trump should be impeached. So I decided, all right, this is a magazine that has been around for decades. What are the credentials of the author of this article? He's a theologian, and I thought, wonder why he's sharing his opinion on politics, because he doesn't have any credentials. So then another high-profile theologian, one who's very well-respected, wrote a response to say, well, I don't think Donald Trump should be impeached. And he literally said in his article, I'm no constitutional scholar. Guess the next word.
However.
But.
Pretty much. Whatever. But. And then he launched into his opinion of what he thought the Constitution said and what Donald Trump did or didn't do. And I thought to myself, lesson learned. I'm going to stay in my little old lane. I don't talk about things that I know little. Well, I'd like to, because we all have an opinion on such things. But should you happen to have some sort of public outlet, just maybe consider the difference between studied, reasoned, thoughtful observations versus, this is what I think. Nevertheless, we're going to talk about sports, and I know what you're thinking. Friel, if you're a dodo on politics, which I am, it's even worse in the realm of sports. No argument from me. Why then would we be talking sports? Because it is intersecting with theology. Specifically, Aaron Rodgers of the Green Bay Packers was interviewed recently, and he talked about his former faith. That's right. Aaron Rodgers, quarterback, still probably licking some wounds right about now, sat down to do an interview, and his faith came up because he announced that he's no longer a Christian. He is now spiritual. And I thought, let's see what lessons we can learn from Aaron Rodgers. What went sour? Now, theologically, we know that if he left us, he was never with us. In other words, Aaron Rodgers isn't backsliding. He never slid forward in the first place. Once God saves you, nothing can separate you from that love, not even yourself. God has you in his hand. He is going to hold you. You can wobble, you can tremble, you can shake, you can fall down, go boom, but you can't get yourself unsaved. Aaron Rodgers professing he was never among us and he is now spiritual. And it was so telling, so revealing, I thought we can learn some lessons from this. This is not an effort to do a screed on every person he's going to mention in his confession that he's no longer a Christian. But what can we learn? Knowing full well, God does the saving. Nevertheless, I don't want people to get saved despite my efforts. We've seen that, haven't we? Methodologies and tricks that we've used to get people saved that are not biblical, and yet some people hold on to them because, well, some people got saved. Well, the question is it biblical? Furthermore, I don't want to have to be included in a footnote that says, well, God used it despite what he did. Don't want to do that with youth group. Don't want to do that with preaching. Don't want to do that with evangelism. How does God want us to train up young people? And that is a question that is being asked a lot these days. What do we do with this next generation? And the question that is asked is going to lead to either a correct or incorrect answer. If we ask, what do we need to do to keep the church growing or keep the church young? We've asked the wrong question already, because that is going to lead to pragmatism. That is going to lead to, we'll do whatever it takes to get him here. Well, it seems that Aaron Rodgers is actually a victim of that mindset. Let's listen to Aaron Rodgers explain why he is no longer a Christian, so that you and I can avoid any errors that led to this, well, rather sad interview.
Most people that I knew, church was just, you just had to go. Your parents made you go, you wake up, you put some clothes on, you go. And you.
Okay, that's instructive right there, Mom and Dad. Now, look, I get it. Getting ready for church on Sunday morning does not need a sermon before the sermon. But maybe explaining to kids why we put on the effort, why we put on these clothes, why we get up even when it would be a lot easier to just sleep in, might help the kids understand why we do what we do, as opposed to just get up, get dressed, let's go.
Can't wait to get back and watch the second game of the day in the NFL on TV. But I started going to Young Life, and that's where I met Matt Hawk, who you know, Matt. And Matt was leading our Young Life group there for a while, and he was the first Christian that I met where I was like, man, like, this dude, like, swears every now and then. He loves sports.
Okay, this is an individual. I don't know who it is, and this isn't a commentary on that fellow. But we can conclude this. The methodology of being cool, of being hip, to be attractional for the kids, in this instance, it didn't work. And that is why we should not be asking the question, what appears to work? But what does the Bible say? How are we to be talking to our kids? How are we to be talking? Well, it's not with potty mouth. We're supposed to be treating the kids in a dignified way so that they become increasingly dignified. So lesson number, well, I guess it's two now. This let's be coarse, let's be contemporary. It didn't stick with Aaron Rodgers.
I enjoyed my time with Young Life. We did some amazing outreach stuff. You know, we went to Mexico during two spring breaks and built houses in, like, Florido.
No, lesson number three. Nothing wrong with building a house in Florido. Did he mean Florida? Nah, he's been there before. Wherever Florido is, he went to build a house with Young Life. Very nice. Please remember, that's not a missions trip. That's a mission of mercy, but it's not a missionary journey where you preach the gospel. It's doing a kind act. What is the lesson from this? While certainly it is nice to go dig a well, to go build a house, those trips, while they can have their benefits, I'm not arguing that point at the moment, that doesn't get one saved, nor does it keep one saved. But now we get to the guts of the issue with Aaron Rodgers, who, by the way, in this video, you on the football field, looks like a pipsqueak compared to the other guys. This dude's a mountain. He's sitting next to this young lady, and it's like his calves are bowling balls, and he's actually quite substantial, this fellow. He's a big boy. And he concluded, Christianity isn't for me, and this is a word that you're going to hear regularly, therefore it is one that we should learn to address. Christianity, it's so binary.
There's not really a Young Life for college. It gets into more organized, you know, athletes in action or whatever it might be, campus organizations. And
that is why I would encourage you to get your student plugged into a local church. There's some good ministries on college campuses, some better than others, but there's some good ones out there, and they are beneficial. But if you want your child to be plugged into something that is rock solid, focusing not on games but on the gospel, get them plugged into a local church.
I just didn't find any connection points with those things, and started questioning things, and had friends who had other beliefs, and enjoyed learning. That's kind of a part of my life. Had some good friendships along the way that helped me, you know, to figure out what exactly I wanted to believe in. And ultimately, it was that rules and regulations and binary systems don't really resonate with me.
Seemed to be a big deal. black or white, Jesus being exclusive. I think that's what he's referring to with binary systems. And while that seems to always be a compelling argument in religion, it is not in reality. There is a binary system every time he enters a football arena. You've got to have a ticket to get in. That's binary. There are rules of behavior when you're there watching. Binary. Rules on the field. Binary. Somebody wins, somebody loses. Binary. Super Bowl champion, and then the Minnesota Vikings. Binary. So he lives with binary systems, but he rejects them when it comes to the exclusivity of Jesus Christ. Why? Most likely, and I think we're going to hear this, and this happens a lot, and this is a lesson for us, Mom and Dad. He met a lot of people that were different religions who were nice. We need to let our kids know, you're going to meet some nice Buddhists and some nice Hindus. The issue is not nice in religion. The issue is truth. What is truth and what is not? And if we've been talking about other religions, especially in any sort of negative light, and believe me, I'm not saying not do that, but at that, they just hear, oh boy, you know, Hinduism terrible and Buddha, oh bad, and what the Muslims are, which may all be accurate in the context that you speak it. But then they go and meet some of those people and they go, wow, they're really nice. Maybe I've been lied to. Moral to the story, the issue isn't nice. The issue is truth. Lessons from Aaron Rodgers continue on Wretched Radio.
Thanks for joining us today. Glad you would spend part of it listening to Wretched Radio. We always hear we have to be vigilant and willing to do battle with false teaching. Yeah? Well, we need to be able to discern the true from the almost true to do that. That's why Drive-By False Teaching is waiting for you at the Wretched Store, wretched.org/false-teaching. Honestly, the New Testament canon wasn't even closed yet, and two major heresies had already infiltrated the church. And false teaching is, well, recycling, really. The devil just repackages the old heresies, dresses them up in new clothes, and tries to pawn them off on the contemporary church. Get your copy of Drive-By False Teaching today. Learn those five ancient heresies. Learn about the Charismatic Movement, the Jehovah's Witnesses, Scientology, and more. Drive-By False Teaching, available now at wretched.org/false-teaching. It will help you defend our Christian doctrines. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
No doubt if you've spent even a minute listening to conservative media, you have been whipped into a frenzy. The problems with our society, the collapse of a culture, the statistics, the legislation. We got to do something about this. But then we're never told what to do. I believe the greatest social ill of our time is the war against the unborn. Millions of children being killed in our country during our lifetime. And we can do something about it, and we can practically get engaged in the war for life. Preborn.org/wretched. $28 will provide an ultrasound 80% of the time. It saves the life of a child. Let's not just be righteously indignant. Let us do something to save lives. The women hear the gospel, they receive support, and they choose life. $28 for an ultrasound. Preborn.org/wretched.
Thanks very much to the generosity of our monthly gospel partners. Now, if you watch or listen to Wretched on a regular basis, would you consider becoming a gospel partner? See, our content, what we do, is only available because of the generous support of our gospel partners. Thanks to them, you can find full Wretched radio and TV episodes at the home of all things Wretched, wretched.org, among many other free resources. You see, without our gospel partners, there is no Wretched. So, if you enjoy watching or listening to Wretched and would like to continue to do so, consider please becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner. Visit wretched.org/donate for all the details. And please know that we will be faithful stewards of your money. Right now, 83% of every dollar goes to ministry work. Consider becoming a gospel partner. Go to wretched.org/donate. Christians are called to make disciples, but where do we start? Hearts for the Lost assists local pastors and church congregations by helping them equip the saints with biblical principles for personal evangelism. They'll fly out to your church to put on an evangelism seminar and then go out into the streets with you to put it into practice. And it's all free. To learn more or to schedule a conference, go to heartsforthelost.com. Heartsforthelost.com.
Books of the Bible. The Apostle John wrote a third epistle commending Christians who were walking in the truth and showing love by their hospitality. He warned against a selfish and divisive man, whom he criticized publicly, specifically, and by name. As you continue to walk in the truth, take care to show hospitality to good teachers and avoid bad teachers. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Enjoyed learning about other religions and meeting the Dalai Lama. You know, it's been a fun path to a different type of spirituality, which to me is more, it's been more meaningful.
Former Christian Aaron Rodgers, this is Wretched Radio, the Green Bay quarterback, announcing publicly, I used to be a Christian, now I'm spiritual. Does that mean he lost his faith? No. It means he never had a saving faith in the first place. And there are so many lessons to be learned from this fellow. And he's sharing a lot of these in a sit-down interview with, well, it turns out to be his girlfriend, confessing why he decided, Christianity, it's not for me anymore. And one of his reasons is meeting people of other religions. They're so nice. They're so friendly. And how can it possibly be that Christianity is the only way? If you will notice, virtually everything that Aaron Rodgers says, his excuses for no longer being a Christian, they're emotions-based, feelings-driven. He does not talk much about truth, except to state, I know that the truth claims of Christianity are not binding, because he rejects what he calls binary systems. And that is something, if he's talking like that, it must be floating around out there. Binary systems. He says that he doesn't like it in religion, although we are living in a binary world and we are all binary girls and boys. There is true and false. I suspect Aaron Rodgers wants it to be binary when he's driving down the road. That he wants his one-way street to be one-way indeed. That he wants the stop sign to be binary, meaning stop. We live in a binary world, but somehow we move into this realm of religion and those rules don't apply. Why? Why shouldn't they? Why do people not bellyache about 2 + 2 = 4, but Jesus saying, I am the way, the truth, the life? Oh, that's so binary. What can we learn from Aaron Rodgers? He continues talking about why he has just become spiritual. Slightly different shadings than what we've heard from some people, but a lot of the same old canards.
Would you separate the two, being spirituality and religion? Like, you were religious and now you're spiritual?
I think both can work for people. I do. I think some people just need structure and they need tradition and stuff, and that works for them. And I don't have a problem with it. It doesn't resonate with me.
Yeah.
Does it work? Well, work on what? Ultimately, everything is vanity. Nevertheless, some systems can work to temporarily make you feel better, to give you some structure, a reason to get out of bed in the morning because the alarm clock went off to get you to church or temple or synagogue, or to take a tour of the Coke factory. And that works, but that does not address the issue of, is it true? And this is also just a more polite twist on Christianity, religion. It's simply a vehicle for feeble-minded people. They need a crutch. Maybe we do. Maybe we don't. It's irrelevant. The question is, what is true? And that is why when we talk to our kids, we need to be talking to them in terms of truth. That is the issue.
I had two groups I was going to. I was going to church on Sundays and then to Young Life on Mondays. And Young Life on Monday welcomed everyone. You know, it's like,
right,
come as you are. Be there at 7:29.
Yep.
And, like, be ready for some fun.
That's instructive right there, isn't it? There's different campus ministries. Some are better than others. He was going to a fun ministry. Did fun attract Aaron? Yes, it did. Did fun keep Aaron? No, it didn't. Furthermore, we do not do kids a favor by amusing them when we are not answering the big questions, when we are not diving into truth, when we are not preparing them for the buzzsaw that they are going to meet at university. Fun is, you know, fun, but fun doesn't save and fun doesn't keep and fun does not help them when they are challenged by other people. Can we please learn that lesson once and for all?
It was fun and we had a great time. Church on Sundays was like more, you know, make sure you dress a certain way and don't bring that person. And this person's going to get looked at strangely if they show up. And I think, you know, again, it's very black and white, binary in binary sense, but I don't think it's very welcoming.
All right. Can we learn anything from that? Sure. Whatever his experience is, did he think people in church were judgmental with their glances? And the answer is maybe. I'm willing to take that critique. How do we treat people who come in as guests who don't dress what we think is appropriate or culturally correct for our situation? How do we look at them? How do we greet them? How do we welcome them? His experience was, when I went to the fun center, we welcomed everybody. Of course, because I doubt truth was being taught there. Go to church, you know, the serious place, the whole God stuff. And they didn't seem like they were as nice. Therefore, concluded Aaron Rodgers, God doesn't exist. That's bad logic. That's bad reason. That would be like me saying, I went to Aaron Rodgers' house, and when I got there, his butler or whoever opens the door for him didn't look at me very nice, wasn't very welcoming. Therefore, I conclude Aaron Rodgers doesn't exist. It's nonsensical. Nevertheless, people will use that. Does that give me license because it's a bad conclusion with bad logic? Does it give me license then to be crabby? No, it doesn't. I don't want to be that way. We do want to be welcoming. But his issue probably is that we didn't let people stay in their sins. We called them to something higher, and that we can never give in on.
Religion can be a crutch, can be a...
Maybe.
Can be something that people have to make themselves feel better.
And maybe.
Because it's set up binary, it's us and them. It's saved and unsaved.
Exactly. And why is that bad? Does he want everybody to go to heaven? Again, the conclusion on this is so illogical. God doesn't save everybody. I want God to save everybody. God doesn't. Therefore, he doesn't exist. Like you can maybe be a little bit upset about the way you think God is running his house, but that does not deny his existence.
Heaven and hell. It's enlightened and heathen. It's holy and righteous and sinner and filthy. And I think that makes a lot of people feel better about themselves.
Super Bowl ring winner, non-Super Bowl ring winner, resident of Green Bay, non-resident of Green Bay, professional football player, the rest of us. It's all binary in a sense, in so many ways. And Aaron Rodgers, like so many people, willing to live under that system, but not in the realm of religion. And this is a lesson. We must be talking about theology, not in the abstract, not as a little quadrant over here that that's what we need to get through the day. Give us some sort of transcendent feeling. Give us some sort of contentment so that we can sleep at night. But then we close the door on that, and then we get back to the rest of the binary world. That is something that we need to be addressing with our kiddos.
You know, I got Jesus, and, you know, I'm saved, and I'm going to heaven, and there's only 144,000 of us going, even.
Okay, I have no...
Mixing his singing voice.
Yeah, if he only thinks 144,000 people are going to heaven, we all make mistakes, but one wonders the depth of his theological instruction.
So there's 7 billion people on the planet, and, you know, I don't know how you can believe in a God who wants to condemn most of the planet.
Stop right there. Does God want to condemn most of the planet? Not according to the Bible. God wants to save people. God desires that all come to repentance and the knowledge of the truth. Damning people is his peculiar work. It's not what makes him giddy. Saving sinners, that's his great work. Damning them, it's his work, but it's not his great work. And it's not the thing that he delights in. He delights in saving sinners. I wonder if Aaron has ever heard that. That, yeah, the road is broad. Narrow is the way that leads to life. But there are many on it and people pouring into the kingdom. And God delights in doing that work. Oh, he will condemn, but he delights in saving.
You know, to a fiery hell. Like, what type of loving, sensitive, omnipresent, omnipotent being wants to condemn most of his beautiful creation to a fiery hell at the end of all this?
I suspect Aaron was never asked if he considers himself to be a good person. I think his answer would be, yes, I am, and so is the rest of God's beautiful creation. Lesson learned from Aaron Rodgers, teaching our kids, helping them get downwind from themselves, that they are wretched, vile sinners. God does not need to save anyone. The joyous truth is it's a blessing and it's magnificent that he saves anyone. Aaron Rodgers clearly wasn't. Pray that he gets saved. But in the meantime, let's learn some lessons from Aaron Rodgers. This is Wretched Radio.
Sometimes simple is best. The Mission Ball is simply a soccer ball covered with biblical text, a thorough long gospel presentation, and an effective tool for drawing a crowd, making a connection with people, inviting curiosity, and ultimately creating opportunities to proclaim Christ. With your support, the Mission Ball can get into the hands of more lost and dying souls. Go to themissionball.org. That's themissionball.org.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teaches us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the true vine. The Old Testament describes Israel as a vine planted in the desert. Jesus is the true vine, and those who trust in him are grafted in to receive life and nourishment from Christ. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
It's Wretched Radio. What do we do with those old people in church? One church's decision getting a lot of attention. This is Wretched Radio. To Cottage Grove, Minnesota we go. That was the theme song to Golden Girls. I didn't know it either. That was an Andrew Gold song, wasn't it? Why is a woman singing this song?
Because it was the theme song to Golden Girls.
Right. But it was, I think it was a hit on the radio by a guy named Andrew Gold, who also did Lonely Boy, if I'm not mistaken. Can we just stop this program for a second so I can sit in a corner and just weep?
I'm having flashbacks.
That I know any of that. Ike Viltafish, Larry. All right, he's got 1.8 million views on the YouTube machine. I was right. Andrew Gold was the original singer of Thank You for Being a Friend. And I'm trying to memorize Colossians 3, 12 through 14.
Thank you for being a friend.
That sounds great. Cottage Grove, Minnesota, making perhaps one of the biggest public goofs in a long time. Please note the pastor at that church complaining, hey, I'm not being fairly represented. You be the judge on that. It seems to me, while there may be some errors in the reporting in the newspaper, it does happen. Nevertheless, it seems that they have desired to try to keep the church alive and youthful and vibrant by basically firing the old people. Here are the details.
Well, not this so is, much firing as well, what do you pushing them out. It?
Okay. And again, in fairness, the pastor's going, no, we didn't push them out. Well, it does seem that This is what they call it, what you will. This is what it appears happened at this Methodist church in Cottage Grove. They have two campuses. You need to note that. The campus in Cottage Grove is not flourishing as a couple dozen people. They're all 60 plus, with the exception of one family where the parents are 34 years old. In other words, they are facing what many churches are facing in this country. That's probably the important oomph to this particular story. Nevertheless, they brought in a church growth guru. Uh-oh, that's always the first mistake. Who said, what we need to do if we're going to attract the youth is to have the old people stop attending, go to the other campus where they'll kind of blend in a little bit, and then in 6 months, we'll reopen. And by the way, it seems that in the meantime, they still want them to keep giving and mowing the lawn and shoveling the sidewalk. Yeah. So the old people can do that. And then in the fall, they plan on reopening, no old people, and then the youth will come. And then after 15 to 18 months, the old people who had to go to the other service in the other location could reapply with the pastor to see if they could come back to church. Wow. 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 Now,
okay. So as the pastor say, I'm confused here.
Well, the pastor's saying, well, now it's not quite like that exactly. We didn't push them out, but those seem to be the details. Whatever they happen to be, the moral to the story is this church is not unique. What is a church to do when it appears it's dying? What does a church do when it's the demographic is, whoa, we have very few, that we can't keep going because once everybody here no longer can attend church or dies, this church will go with it. Well, here's my first question. Now, and please note, I don't intend to say this like, well, that's pretty casual and easy for you to say, pal. It's our church. We built it with our own hands. We put in time and money. I understand that. I can't help but think, though, at least one option for some churches is they're going to, and no fault of their own. The community, let's just say it's a place where farming is not big anymore, and all the kids are leaving. I mean, they're not going anywhere. It could be that some circumstances, a church can't keep going when this demographic, when they leave us, it just can't. That is an option. So the question, though, is what do we do about it? How do we keep the church healthy, youthful, and alive? Wrong question, wrong question, wrong question. Those are pragmatic questions that will inevitably lead to what we have seen in the seeker-sensitive movement. This is precisely what was being addressed decades ago when we decided to go out into the public and ask people in the neighborhood, hey, what would you like our little local church to be so that you'll come? In other words, the church, which is supposed to be a lifeboat, started using Folgers coffee cans, because they had really bad coffee then too, and just pouring the world into the boat. And what's going to happen? It's going to sink. And it's not going to be the type of church that Jesus wants. By asking, what do we do to make this thing a success? It's inevitably going to lead to a wrong end. Now, having said that, is there anything wrong with asking, okay, what can we do to be a light in this community? That's a different question. Here's a different question, even more perhaps poignant than that one. How does Jesus want us to do church? That's the question. And I think that's the first one that needs to be answered. How does Jesus want us to do church? Because if we turn this church into something that merely attracts a particular demographic, then we might become what he doesn't want. And he might not be pleased with what we're doing. And have we not seen enough of that fruit? Really? Have we not seen enough? These gross out games that the youth groups do, this is precisely where these came from. What do we need to do to get the kids here? And we decided we're going to play banana barf. Kids put a banana in their mouth, then you put a nylon stocking on their head. They have to somehow spew the banana through the nylon stocking, and then when they take the stocking off, it smears all over their face, and everybody laughs. And if you think I'm making that up, Google it yourself. That is precisely the way they describe it. Everybody, Joey, no, please.
I've not done that, but I've seen it done multiple times.
Okay, standard, that's where this leads when we ask the wrong question. What do we need to do to get the kids there? First of all, I don't think banana barf is going to do it for long. Furthermore, was talking to young Jack here at Wretched. Jack is, he just turned 19. And I was mentioning banana barf, and he's like, he just looked like he just had some sort of flashback to a war that he didn't want to be in. I went to youth group, and that's the type of stuff that they did, and I just hated it. I hated it. And then when we finished doing these silly games, okay, so now we're going to talk about Jesus. Yo! Yo, yo, yo! Okay, everybody, calm down! Okay, so here's the story. I'm going to keep this quick, so don't worry. Where did that come from? Asking the wrong question. Do I recognize that if we simply do church the way that Jesus wants us to do it, that no kids might come? Yes, I do. Do I realize that a church could die out if we do it the way that our God wants us to do it? Yeah, yes, I do realize that. But we need to resolve that question. We need to answer it. What is church? Who gets to run the church? Who makes these decisions? Do I understand the heart behind it? I do. I really do. But I just think it's misguided, and it's a wrong sense of what church is supposed to be about. It is supposed to be an assembling of the saints. This is where the wheat gets together. And when we invite in the tares, you are just inviting in all kinds of problems. And the cliche is true. What you win them with, you got to keep them with. And then you got to amp it up even more. Otherwise, they get bored with it. And so we have seen this question asked and answered 1,000 times. And when you look at the squishy evangelical movement and wonder, how did this happen? I would suggest to you one of the ways, in fact, perhaps one of the major ways, was by asking the wrong question. What do we do to keep the church alive? We're going down in membership. Uh-oh, what do we do? Wrong, wrong, wrong. What does Jesus want? Answer that, resolve that, and then I do believe it's fair to say, so how do we let the world know about this? Not so that we can keep the church alive, not so that we can grow the place, but because we want them to enjoy Jesus too. We don't want them floundering. We don't want them perishing. We don't want their families being the shipwreck that so many of them are. We want better for them. Let's go find them. But that's totally different than what. Okay, so what do we need to do to get people here? It's a different question, and it's a different motivation. And even though I'm quite certain people who have asked the question, what do we need to do to grow the church, have been correctly motivated, I'm sure that that's the case. Nevertheless, it will never, ever deliver the results that they were hoping for. And you will ultimately build, if these methodologies work, a center that maybe attracts, entertains, and amuses people, or it becomes a social network center, but it will never be the church that Jesus wants it to be. What do we do with this story in Cottage Grove? Well, we'll let them folks work those details out and get the facts straight. But let us learn the lesson of the seeker-sensitive movement. Let's stop asking the wrong question. What do we do to keep this place alive? How do we grow this place? And start asking the question that Jesus wants us to ask. Lord, what do you want your church to be? And he will bless that whether the doors stay open or not. This is Wretched Radio. Let's go to Eastern Europe for yet another great story coming out of the Tomorrow Clubs.
Andrea was left by her mother when she was 3 months old. The Tomorrow Club director decided to pray for this girl, and she repented. She used to be a sad-looking kid. Now, seems like that smile never comes off her face.
So many kids are abandoned by parents who need to go to other countries to make a living. They donate their organs. They leave the kids. They are lost physically and spiritually, and the Tomorrow Clubs finds them. They teach them the gospel. They help them to memorize Bible verses. They even will help them with their family lives. It's a magnificent ministry, story after story coming out of Eastern Europe. $30 a month, 30 disciples. Tomorrow Clubs is the ministry. Would you please consider supporting a club of your own? TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Without sounding too much like a mafia don, here's an offer you can't refuse. Wretched would like to give you up to 20 copies of our evangelistic booklet, What Time is Purple? And Other Intriguing Questions on the Road Trip to Truth. You heard me right. We want to give you these beautiful, thorough gospel booklets. But there are two strings attached. Well, really tiny strings, more like fishing line. Actually, thread would be better. You pay for shipping only, and you promise to give them away to the atheist or agnostic in your life who believes that evolution disproves the existence of God. Go to wretched.org/purple today and get your copies of What Time is Purple. It's also a great idea for the student in your life who's heading off to school or anyone who doubts that the Bible is true. Get your copies of What Time is Purple at wretched.org/purple. And thanks very much to the generosity of our gospel partners who make this giveaway possible.
What two pastors go through to bring Bibles to their parishioners in the Philippines.
Two pastors, they had to rise up 3 a.m. and walk for 2 hours. And after that, they have to ride a bangka across the river for an hour and then walk again for 3 hours just to get hold of those precious Bibles. They will return in the same way again to bring those Bibles to people whom they are ministering.
That is what they go through. What must you and I do to bring those Bibles to believers around the globe? Pick up our phones. Call Bible League International. Would you do that right now? $5 per Bible. Could you send 7 per month? Call Bible League International right now, and they will be delivered to the hands of a believer. 1-800-YES-WORD. Just giving you a chance to write that down or to call it. 1-800-YES-WORD to bring Bibles to believers through Bible League International. 1-800-YES-WORD.
Important dates in Christian history. 1948. The World Council of Churches is formed as an interdenominational body promoting Christian unity and presence in society. Modern ecumenism saw differing denominations work together in spiritual and social causes, but also resulted in the watering down of Christian doctrine. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Here we go.
You be the judge.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Order in the court.
Let's play You Be the Judge. This is Wretched Radio. As always, representing the tens and tens of wretched listeners, our very own in-house Lutheran, Tony Verkennis. Tony, are you prepared to play your most onerous? No. Earnest role. I think onerous may have been a little bit more closer.
Pick that.
Potato, potato.
Yeah.
Which story is worsest? That's right. As long as we're hacking grammar, which story is worsest? I will try to keep track for you. Nevertheless, here we go. Story number one. From the Des Moines Register. Convicted of sex crimes as a man, the fellow no longer deemed threat because of gender change. Let me just try to explain this to you. I had to read the story several times. I took that bullet for you. The Attorney General, Lynn Hicks, was involved in the decision to release a man, 23-year-old, convicted of molesting a fellow MCS student in 2014. And then buried in this story, it also reveals that he had molested 15 other victims, ranging in age from 13 to 1. This fellow named Joe has been going through gender replacement transfer, I want to mutilate my body program, whatever that thing is called. And so now I think he's Josie, and the judge determined now that he's a girl and he does not have the same intense drives, his likelihood of reoffending are below the level that the state has determined is more likely to offend than not. Therefore, they're in the process of letting him go. You think I'm making this stuff up?
I hope so.
The Attorney General said, we don't believe we have evidence sufficient to prove Josie has a significant chance of reoffending. Follow along if you can. The AG cautioned the public not to overreact to Smith's upcoming release. No. Why would we do that? Why would we do that? Apparently, 50%, somehow they determine if the person has a 50% chance of reoffending, that determines whether they go to jail or not. The report found the likelihood of reoffending within 5 years of release exceeded 20% because victims were of both genders and because Smith was under age 25 and never had a long-term relationship. Quote from the report, Mr. Smith, I thought it was Miss Smith, but whatever, has not had an intimate relationship. His sexual encounters appear to have primarily involved molestation. Oh, okay. So he was just molesting children, but he was not actually having a relationship with the children. That's better. Dr. Tracy Thomas, a forensic psychologist and former clinical director of CCUSO, said the statute that outlines civil commitment requires the state to essentially prove an offender has a chance of offending greater than 51% for the rest of his life. That becomes harder to prove when an offender significantly lowers his testosterone levels, which has a significantly higher impact on sex drive than estrogen. Story number one, right there. You're agog. You're simply agog.
There's something worse to stir than this?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. College professor wants to make child rape legal. Professor at the University of Texas in Austin. You've got Texas, and then you've got Austin and Houston, pretty much the way it seems to roll. The professor, a classics professor, has called for the lowering age of consent laws that protect children from sexual predators and child rapists. He also said contemporary American legislation banning child rape as something based on outmoded gender constructions and ideological preoccupations. Wow, he must be right. Look at all the big words he used. It must be bad. He thinks children who cannot be trusted to smoke, drink, vote, buy guns, etc., you know, drive, should be allowed to consent to having relations with adults. Why? Here are the two words. Please do not forget these, because this is the engine that drives this entire train wreck. Sexual orientation. If an adult has that sexual orientation, or the child has a sexual orientation where the child desires somebody who's clearly older, then it's okay. It's all good. That's our umbrella. Learn from the Greeks, he said. You know what, sir? We actually did. And we decided Greek bad, Bible good. Learn from the Greeks, he said, pointing to ancient Greek pederasty. As a beneficial example for modern America, ancient Greece showed that where age-discrepant relationships, again, let's just litter this with big terms. Oh, it must be scientific. They were commonplace and positively reinforced. Not if you were the little boy or the little girl. They cause little or no long-term harm to the younger partner and often confer great benefit. Oh, it's good for you now. First of all, I don't know how many of these Greek children he interviewed because, well, they've been dead for a couple thousand years. Second of all, you're telling me that traumatic abuse, that criminal act doesn't affect a child. No. It doesn't. In fact, it's beneficial. Oh, please tell me, big-worded professor. Just enlighten us illiterate masses. He went on to claim that boys without fathers would especially benefit from being intimate with grown men. Sure. Quote, big word alert. Pederastic intimacy evolved in part as a social mechanism for addressing it. Contemporary U.S. culture has not compensated for the magnitude of the problem. Arguing 14-year-old boys should be allowed to consent, and this was hardly a radical concept. Oh, of course. I'm sorry. On what side of history are you, sir? That's story number two, Tony. I do believe you asked which story could possibly get any worse than that. Mm-hmm. How am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Story number three. I'm sorry. These all appear to be rather related to the same subject, which sadly they are these days. Look, please keep sending stories to idea@wretched.org.
Just not these kind.
No, but these are the stories of our day. This is what's dominating our headlines and our stories and our universities. And it's bound to be this way. When you read Romans 1, this is bound to be the devolving of a culture. Where does it go? Sexual depravity. This is all about sexual liberty, expressing yourself any way that you want to. Well, now we live in a relatively literate society. Well, not compared to that Austin professor who's clearly smarter than we is. And so it seems what we've got to do it scholastically. We've got to do it from the institutions to demonstrate that this is scientific because we don't want to look like barbarians, you know. But that's precisely the road that they're on. They are not moving forward. They are moving backward. These things were tried and true. Study history. People used to behave like animals. Along came the Torah and went, nope, not the way to do it. Man, male and female created he them. Period. And it just radicalized the view of intimacy in the Middle East and around the globe. Along comes the New Testament and did it even more so. One man, one woman, because it's theological. It points to a greater reality. And we evolved away from degradation into what's more biblical. Even if the culture didn't believe in God, it was still better for society. This is a temptation, by the way. Biblical principles, even imposed on a pagan society, will help those pagans, even if they don't believe it. Why is that a temptation? Well, it seems so good, and there is, I grant you, that there is some benefit to that, but that's not the goal of the church. That's doing what the Pharisees did. That's imposing morals and values externally without the heart change. That would be to take the bait of the secularists who always believe the problem is external. The Bible says it's internal. The culture says problems outside. Fix the outside, give them a better home life, give them a better education, give them job opportunity, and they won't behave like this. And they'll be happier, everything will be better. The Bible says no. They need a heart transplant. The temptation for us is, the reality is, if our culture follows biblical principles, even unwittingly, they get an education, they get married, they stay married, they have children in wedlock. It is, you can look at the stats. It works. But don't go for that bait. Now, we can try to help our culture with those things, informing them in whatever way you see fit. But don't think that that is ultimately going to help people. Because the Bible makes it clear they must have a heart transplant. Ultimately, this is going to sound pretty shocking, but what does it benefit a culture if they stop behaving like animals, but they die and go to hell? Our message, our concern is always eternal. All right, Tony.
You be the judge.
Only got two of them in there.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
Which one is worse? College professor wants rape to be legal, or the man who became a woman, therefore he's not guilty of molesting a bunch of children? What say you, sir?
Yes. actually, if I had to pick, I'd go with the professor, because that would have effects nationwide, forever, everywhere.
Then you are really blessed that you didn't hear story number three.
Oh, I'm going to have a small stroke.
And five. Remember, keep our eye on the eternal prize. Yes, our culture needs help externally, but they need it internally far more. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.